there's a lot of gray areas where we need to come together, where we can come together, and where healing can really happen. So I want to give you the opportunity to just maybe tell me how you're doing, you know, how this year has started for you, and before we dive into our topic today. So welcome.
Thank you. I always enjoy coming to talk to you, and I laugh when we log on a couple minutes early and we're like excitedly starting to talk about the topic, and then we're like, wait, we're going to do this, you know, for a reason here in a minute. But I think it's a sign that obviously we've got to know each other pretty well, especially over the last year. And I always appreciate you being willing to switch topics at the drop of a hat and also hold space for conversations that other people may be, like you said, are, I think, a large part of the reason we're at where we're at is that there was a lot of, oh, that's unfortunate, and then we just move on or we sweep it under the rug. And so I think it's really incredibly important that we take the time to really stop, reflect. It was scary, but it shouldn't have been shocking to anybody that has been paying attention. And so, you know, people that are saying that they're shocked or they're surprised, you know, I have to wonder how much of that ignoring or kind of passing by they were doing as they were going through 2020, which was a lot. And it's really hard to take in everything, right? And process it and prioritize and decide which areas that we need to pay attention to. And I want to give a shout out to Estoya Key, which Isabel Garcia came on and talked to you about suicide prevention. And I've heard of community care before, back all the way in undergrad. I took a community psychology class. It was wonderful. Highly recommend if you get a chance. And I've been learning more about community care over the last several months because of her posts and her organization's posts. And I went back into my notes. And, you know, yesterday, as I watched the events unfold, I was like, this is because most people are not practicing community care. They have forgotten that they're not just part of a small community, they're part of many communities, large communities, et cetera. And, you know, while it doesn't feel like it at the moment, the U.S., the United States, is a community, and we haven't been taking care of it.
You said something so powerful right there. The U.S. is a community, and, you know, there's so much division right now that, yes, we have forgotten. We have forgotten that we, you know, the United States, you know, united. I think that's the key word right there. So to dive into community care, I want to start with a quote. I want to start with a quote that maybe some of our listeners and some of our viewers have actually seen before, but maybe just like me, maybe I've read this before, but I didn't quite understand it, and I didn't really understand the impact that it had, right? And it's a quote from Nikita Valerio, and it says, you know, that shouting self-care at people who actually need community care is how we fail, right? So I want us to start by unpacking a little bit of this quote. And I think that the first place is maybe for some people just like me, community care is this whole new concept. So let's unpack what that is. Let's unpack what community care is.
So community care is small little itty bitty things, medium-sized things, and big things that basically give care and empathy back into our communities. And so it's a really simplistic explanation, I'm aware. But what we're looking at is basically the idea is that communities don't exist without the people within them. And we're part of those communities. And so if we are not giving back into these communities that do support us, whether or not we feel like they do provide support. And I have all sorts of theories we can talk about if you'd like, but I'll leave that for a second. So the idea is basically, it can be little things like smiling and waving at your neighbor and knowing their name. And I'm guilty of only knowing 2 out of 3 of my neighbor's names. And I, yesterday was like, I got to fix this, right? So I'm going to try to seek them out the next time we're both outside and talk to them. It could be things like picking up trash around your neighborhood or planting flowers, or I know everybody hates HOAs, but they do provide a little bit of a little bit of community care. We're very fortunate to have a really light HOA, but there's been times that I've wished that they've done more, right? So it's kind of a double-edged sword. Anyway, it can be things like volunteering, donating to a food bank, protesting, voting, looking at policies that we have in place and rewriting them, throwing them out, removing barriers, putting tiny libraries up in your community, using the community services so that they know that they're there and that they can get more funding and then help those that might actually need it. So stuff like the libraries right now, I know it's a pain to use the library in COVID, but it's important that we continue to support these institutions this way. And stuff like going to art shows, right? I know that seems really silly, but our local community artists are only going to survive and give back and create a beautiful culture if we support them. And so that doesn't necessarily mean you have to drop thousands of dollars on a painting, although if you can, great. But showing up, sharing the word, talking about people, connecting folks that need help. I mean, there's just a lot of really beautiful ways that we can practice community care.
You know, I want to read from the article that you shared with me yesterday. It says here, community care means showing up. It means that when you find yourself in the position of being able to give more than you need to receive, then you do so, right? But it also says that you know that your community is also going to have your back if you're ever on the other side of things, right? It says that it's a commitment to contribute in a way that leverages one's relative privilege. You know, it uses the word privilege right there. And it says, while balancing one's needs. I want to talk about that balance, Julie, because I think that, you know, we hear this word privilege so much right now. And that was a big word that was really trending yesterday on all social medias, right? Privilege. Let's explore that, the privileges, the needs, and how that comes, you know, and affects our mental health. You know, there's just so many conversations around that, so many intricacies around it that I don't think we fully understand it. So if you can maybe help us clarify, you know, that big word privilege and how it, and the balance between the privileges and the needs and how that is community care and how that is healing.
Yes. So privilege, to start off, is a recognition, not necessarily that your life is easier. I just want to be really, really clear. It's not saying that you haven't experienced hardship. It is saying that you don't have these other, whatever they are, these other barriers added on. And so as a white female living in the US, I carry some privilege because of the color of my skin. My family was highly college educated, likely because of our white privilege, right? So everybody in my family has a master's above me. I'm the first one to go to PhD, but that's not even like a big deal if your whole family expects education, right? You know, we can talk about physical ability or disability. We can talk about sexual orientation. We can talk about gender. We can talk about age. We can talk about race, of course, ethnicity, cultures, being a citizen, being not a citizen. I mean, there's so many ways that privilege can show up. And basically, I know this makes people uncomfortable, but it's so important that we talk about it and that we practice community care by listening and reflecting and thinking about how we can move forward. So the further away you are from a white male that is physically capable, able, who is cisgendered, heterosexual, right? A citizen and from probably a long line of citizenship and probably wealthy, the less privilege you experience. So this is how America was constructed. The US was constructed by a bunch of older white men. And so the system is designed to support them. And so the further away we get, the more barriers or disadvantages or lack of privilege that we experience. And so using your privilege means that you recognize, for instance, that I'm a white female. And so I experience higher levels of privilege by the general society. And while that maybe didn't show up in my direct life because I was whatever, I'm just using myself as an example here. But I think a lot of people get very triggered by the word privilege because they don't recognize that they are privileged because they have experienced hardship. And so this does not mean, you know, I'm white, so I was given $1 million at birth. Absolutely not. That's not the reality. The reality is that you're not going to experience discrimination the way that people that are different colors or abilities or sexual orientations or whatever than you do. So using your privilege basically means that I recognize that I have privilege and that I have the ability to speak in spaces and not maybe be, not experience the same level of discrimination or hardship that other people do. And so I can use that to advocate. I can use my privilege to advocate for others or to help amplify other people by bringing them into the conversation where they maybe wouldn't have been chosen to speak before. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot over the last year, you know, as a small business of just myself. It's kind of hard, but I've been really reflecting on, you know, who is hiring me to speak with them? And am I the best fit? Should I amplify other voices? How can I do that in a way? It's very difficult when it's just yourself as a small business to kind of make these decisions, but it's something that I've been considering, especially over the last year, about how I can amplify other voices and make sure that opportunities are being given to people that maybe wouldn't have been thought of just because I'm here and I know folks. So how can I use my privilege, my connections, to amplify and elevate other people as well?
Thank you for that clarification, because yes, that word privilege is a word that offends many people, many, many people, because as you said, we understand that as everything was given to us, right? And I feel myself as a very privileged person, right? And I am Latina and I am an immigrant and I have all of these other barriers, but I recognize also all of the privileges that I have and I try to use that. You know, I consider, you know, just the fact that I had a good education and that I learned English from my country, that's a privilege that I have, right? And so I use that to help others. And instead of looking at it with a negative light, I love what you just kind of like challenged us to do is like, accept it, right? Accept it, recognize it, and embrace it as a way of helping others, as a way of, as your tools to amplify other voices that maybe are not coming so strongly, just because in my case, for instance, they did not learn English from when they were little, which I had that opportunity. Many others didn't, and they had to learn English here. So that privilege that I had in my life and that I continue to have, just use that to amplify others and to help and assist and serve others. And to think of that as community care was mind-blowing to me, because I was like, wow, I never thought, you know, and to think of using our privileges as a tool for community care, I think really switches the light on it. And it flips it from a negative, which is kind of how we're seeing and how we're using it and why it offends so many, and just bringing it into the positive, into, yes, be proud of your privilege, but use it to serve others, you know, and take it and embrace it and use it to serve others rather than being offended because you're being told that you have this privilege. The other thing that really struck me, Julie, as I was reading the article, it's that, you know, Nakia's quote was inspired by grief, right? She was trying to really process the news of this Muslim massacre that happened in New Zealand. And I feel that many of us have experienced grief, you know, 2020 with COVID. I mean, really, people lost jobs, opportunities of even travel. I mean, we talked about this at one of our previous shows, right? That grief doesn't just mean when we lose somebody, it's when we lose something that was important. And it can be something that maybe for others is small, right? Like a trip, right? That's something that you were really looking forward to. You're allowed to experience that grief of losing that experience, right? Businesses, I mean, jobs, lives. We've lost a lot of people. Plus, we also have all of these feelings from what we saw yesterday. Maybe grief is one of them, right? So I guess the question that I have here in regards of community care and grief is, how do we use it for healing, right? How do we use community care as that tool for healing this grief that we might experience and move forward?
Yeah. So there is I believe it's Mr. Rogers quote, the red sweater guy. I think he said his mother always said to look for the helpers in times of crisis, or his mother did. And this is one of my favorite quotes. And I'm sorry, I butchered it. I meant to look it up before, before I came on so I could give it to you exactly, but you can look it up if you would like to. I think about this all the time when stuff goes bananas, which, let's be real, the last year, 4 years, 200 years. I mean, it's really up to you how you want to look at it. But anytime something big happens, I think about, okay, this happened, right? I can't change it. I'm, you know, up in Maryland, you know, minding my own business, watching this on YouTube. And so yesterday, as I was sitting there, I said, okay, remember that quote about where are the helpers? And, you know, of course, I didn't really see any in the coverage, but I thought about how we can help, how we can come together, how we can process, how we can be constructive. So like you and probably many people that were watching social media yesterday, everybody's like, oh my gosh, I'm so shocked. I'm so sad. I saw a lot of unfriend me if you support so-and-so, all this kind of stuff. So I'm not going to scold you, because the reality is I have unfriended or unfollowed people in the last year due to their beliefs. And, you know, that's to take care of myself so that I don't get so mad every time I log on to Facebook. But I've also done other stuff. So you can't just sit here anymore. That's what we've really, I hope, come to realize in the last year. We can't just sit and put stuff under the rug anymore, because what happens is what we saw yesterday. What happens is police brutality, and what happens is voter suppression. What happens is like all sorts of things. And so it's really important that we focus our anger, our shock, our disgust, our embarrassment, anxiety, fear, whatever you're feeling, that we channel it into something productive and we become helpers. And I really thought yesterday the best way to do this is to really focus on our communities. Whether the large one of the United States seems way too big, and I hear you, because it does seem like an insurmountable problem sometimes, then we need to start small, right? So who in your community, your chosen friends, your family, who in there maybe needs some support, some love, who in there maybe needs to be called out or called in on some of their beliefs and, you know, kind of talk to a little bit about what they're displaying. Can you go outside and pick up trash? Can you donate money somewhere? Can you donate expertise? Can you check in on your neighbors? Can you become a nursing home pen pal? Can you, all sorts of things, right? So taking our upset at the larger things that maybe we don't have quite as much control over and focusing on things that we do have control over, our immediate community, will then have ripple effects, right? So imagine if everybody yesterday that watched the news was like, what the crap? This is not where I want to live. And so then we turn to our communities and we clean them up and cleaned up physically, emotionally, spiritually, socially, whatever. If we really put this time and attention in, this will have ripple effects everywhere, right? Because what we're seeing is people feel very disenfranchised by the system, right? They feel like they're not being heard. They feel like they're not being supported. They feel like they're being cheated. All of these things are valid in their own ways. And I can't certainly speak for everybody, but I think that what we're seeing is that people feel very lost. They don't feel like they're connected to a community. And so we need to clean ourselves up and channel this energy into a productive way by practicing community care, which is really what I was feeling yesterday. And, you know, certainly there may be other people that disagree with me, and that's fine. But this is really what I was feeling as I was watching the news yesterday.
Well, and I love that you're going exactly where I was leading us. It's like we planned it that way. Because, you know, my next point here is, again, taken from the article. The article had so much information and so many things that just really triggered so many challenges, really. That's really what it was, you know, and questions, right, that I don't have answers for. For instance, it says that community care looks to heal wounds together and eliminate the hazards that cause them together, right? Well, as we're watching things like yesterday, as we continue to feel this divide, right, as tensions are so high and so deep, right, I feel like I get everything that you're saying, and I agree with you so much, right? That it's within our communities, but within our communities, our immediate communities, there's separation. You mentioned, you know, if you're on my feed and you support this or this and that, just unfriend me, right? When we're doing this, when we're already taking this type of approaches that, in my opinion, bring more division and just bring us farther apart, how do we, you know, bridge and find this place of healing and come together to eliminate the hazards, right? Where we don't agree on what those hazards are, right? That's where the big divisions are. So in practicing that community care, right? How do we achieve that unity, respecting also, and with that awareness that there is that division, that there is different points of view. And as you said, that they're valid.
This is very tricky. We could do many, many episodes on this. It's something that I've been thinking about. Well, I shared. I also have unfollowed or unfriended people in the last year, because honestly, it feels very overwhelming. You're like, I don't know how to convince you that you should care about fellow human beings, right? And it can be very frustrating. And so if you feel frustrated, if you feel overwhelmed, definitely don't engage in a conversation at that time. That's not going to do anybody any good, any way, shape, or form, including yourself. The only way forward is that we really are going to have to listen to each other and get down into what the core beliefs are. And right now, we can talk social psychology and talk about in-group, out-group, and identifying with your chosen community. I use that loosely, but you know, with your party, a lot of people feel like for some reason, this means you have to 100% agree with this party. It means that, you know, other people are wrong. I just saw this article 2 or 3 days ago talking about how both sides of the, so the Republicans and Democrats both believe that they're very right and the other person is like really wrong and dumb and immoral. And this was a peer-reviewed article, to be clear. So like people actually did research and all of this. And it was really interesting to read because I've had those thoughts, right? And I try to remind myself that not everybody has had the privilege of receiving a high quality education, of traveling, of meeting people with different viewpoints. And we don't want a community of all one viewpoint. We don't want a community of all one type of person. And we don't want that because then we will never grow. We'll never learn. We'll never get a chance to celebrate in the culture of so many different people. We won't have creativity. That's not the goal. The goal is to be able to live together and to not be full of hate and fear or anger at other people within your community. And it's really difficult. I'm just gonna, you know, I don't have the answer because like I said, I have also unfollowed or unfriended people because I've just been tired. I'm tired of feeling like I always have to explain stuff to people when I do a lot of work to educate myself. Like I keep up on news, I read articles and I talk to different people with different points of view. So why aren't you doing the same, right? So it can get a little hard to sit in those feelings. And I think that a lot of people are feeling burnt out from having to feel like they have to explain to other people why human rights matter or why this is important that we talk about it this way or what privilege is because people get so defensive. So, you know, I think I lost our question a little bit, but you know, I just want to acknowledge it's really hard. I definitely don't have the answers for how to do this. I do know that it's going to take listening and community care. And maybe we don't have to directly confront people's beliefs. We can just quietly go about and do the things that we want to do, right? So we can clean up our communities. We can donate to libraries. We can go to art shows. We can remove barriers at our workplaces and our volunteer organizations. I am so fortunate that I volunteer with 3 different places, and each one of them, I really considered why I wanted to join that group and what I was doing to give back to that community, if that makes sense. So it should be no surprise to anybody. They're all mental health focused or suicide prevention focused, but I know that that's my area of expertise and that I have things that I can share from clinical, personal, family, friend experience, and then I can relate to folks in a lot of different ways. And I also have the privilege of being able to speak to a lot of different people because of who I am and my background. And so what I chose to do is focus on these organizations so that I could help make the world a bit better, my communities a bit better in this area. But this doesn't mean that I ignore everything else, right? So I have donated, I've supported, I've amplified, I've done all these things. And it's exhausting, I'll be honest. It's a lot of work, but it's necessary. It's necessary that we do this. And so it doesn't have to be finances. It doesn't have to be your time, although I encourage you to take a few hours to find some cause that you can support a month. But it also can just be as simple as sharing stuff on social media, whether that's small businesses, whether it's, you know, Planned Parenthood posts, whether it's, you know, whatever, that you can share information so other people can access it as well. You can act as a, like an information hub.
And, you know, there's so many things that you just touched on, Julie, that really, you know, you talked about polarization, right? Because that's where we are, where we, if I say that I'm right and I think this way, this is the only way, right? But you also brought the fact that just because I think this way doesn't mean that it's absolutely the absolute truth. And we don't want it to be the absolute truth. We actually want the different points of view because if everybody was worried about mental health, right, and everybody was in that realm, there would be so many other things that would be overlooked that we would not be paying attention to, right? And it's important to have that diversity of people who care about different issues and go at them in different ways. That's where we get into trouble though, because we have our own little ways of how it should be and how it should work. And that's where we differ. But I think that, you know, as the more that I was reading about this, it was really what I loved about the article was that it really talked about that. It really talked about humanity. It really talked about human needs. When we are able to take all the labels off, right? And just look at the needs, how we take care of those needs is where we differ, but we are all looking to take care of them ultimately. So if we could find a way to really come together and understand that that's what we're all trying to do, and, you know, some ways may be more effective than others, but have that openness to recognize that, I think that we could really start healing our communities, you know, and from there expand and amplify and make it bigger. When you talked about our communities, Julia, I want to kind of like define that, because I think we also think that a community just means my school, or a community just, you have to be in a formal community, if that makes sense, right? But I the way that I understand community is really like your friendships, like that's part of your community. So I want you to help us define what community is so that we can start practicing some of that community care that you have spoken about with a different lens.
Yeah, so this is a cop-out answer. Community is basically how you define it, right? But the reality is we are part of so many different communities, and it's important that we pay attention to as many as we can reasonably. You can't. We're human. We can't attend to every single community everywhere. So there's a theory that I wanted to talk about briefly. If you have taken lifespan development, you likely have heard of this before, human development. It is Bronfenbrenner, what a name, ecological theory. And so the idea is that humans grow up as part of communities, and this is how we're influenced, right? So if you took me and plopped me, same birth year, same parents, same everything, but you plopped me into Japan, I would be a very different person than I am today. And Japan's just a random example, but you can plop me in a different area, California, right? I grew up in Pennsylvania. And that did have a big impact on how I grew up. And I, like I said, I was very privileged and fortunate to travel and to live in different areas. And that also made a huge impact on me and my ability to maybe kind of navigate diverse viewpoints as well. I lived in Canada for a while. And so community basically can be anything you want it to, but Bronfenbrenner defines it as different levels. And I just wanted to like quickly go through them. So the microsystem, it starts with you in the center. And then there's the microsystem, which is like your immediate family, your friends, people you interact with on like a daily basis. And as a child, these are typically chosen for you. Like you don't have too much control over your parents or your grandparents, or even sometimes your friends, because you're kind of stuck with who's next to you. So you have this microsystem. It could also be your like immediate classmates and stuff if you interact with them a lot. So then we have a mesosystem, which is interactions between your microsystems. So maybe your parents talk to your teachers, which, you know, that would be a mesosystem. Then we have our exosystem, which is like the school, the neighborhood, maybe it's your place of worship, some sort of organization. Maybe it's Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts or whatever. So this can be an exosystem. So it's a larger structure that a lot of people are part of, and there's typically different branches or classes or something going on. Then we have our macro system, which is like beliefs and values of your culture. And so America is very individualistic, meaning that we prioritize the individual over everything else. We don't really have this expectation of community care like other areas. We're very big on freedom and a lot of other things we won't get into. We don't have time. And then we have the chrono system, which is the time, basically. So, you know, it's 2021. I had to think about that for a second. It's 2021. What does that mean? 2020, of course, saw COVID-19 happen. That invariably shifted all of our lives, right? I mean, just there's probably almost no argument that everybody experienced a pretty significant disruption in some way, shape, or form. And so this has changed all of our original paths, if that makes sense. It's really given us a different experience than somebody that has not lived through COVID-19, right? Part of the macro system or the exosystem could also be like the US, we talked about like the larger community. So the reason I bring this up is because I consider my community, right? And pre-COVID-19, we used to invite like 20, 25 people over every month for like a brunchy lunchy kind of deal. And this was my chosen community of friends that we really enjoyed each other's company. We would hang out and eat Pop-Tarts, play video games and talk about movies and catch up with each other. And it was such a nice way to still engage in our community when life gets really busy, to have this like monthly kind of meeting. And I really miss that. That was a big part of my self and community care, is to have these kind of meetings. I am part of, you know, Anne Arundel Community College because I teach there, Clark State College in Ohio because I teach there, Capella University because I go there, right? But I'm also part of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention as an organization, right? So these are all different communities that I'm part of that I can choose to put a lot into, a little into, medium amount into, but these are my communities and as also my neighborhood, right? Maryland, if we want to go there, Anne Arundel County, the United States, former Pennsylvanian, whatever we want to define it as. But the reality is many of us are part of a lot of different communities. And so, you know, you have your chosen community, you have your family, you have all sorts of different communities that you can choose how you want to show up for. And maybe your friend community doesn't need a lot of support because perhaps you all have a lot of privilege and you are fairly comfortable. But, you know, if somebody goes to a hospital or has a baby or something, we normally show up, right? Set up the meal train, bring all the casseroles, clean the house, drop off diapers, buy too many books, whatever, right? So we show up for a community. So we're asking for maybe not that exact same level, but that same kind of energy to go forward into other communities so that we don't fall into this trap of, this is my chosen community and I will give into it. But what about the other communities that we're part of that we are kind of chosen, like I chose to live here, right? How do we get back into these communities so that it isn't so divided or bubbled? You said that earlier and that kind of stuck with me, where we're all in our own bubbles. We can't be anymore. We can't. And the internet has really broken down a lot of these bubbles and shown people what are in other people's bubbles. And so how do we show up and improve overall? I don't remember if this is in the article, but somebody said about community care that we're only going to be as best as our weakest link or our weakest member of our community. And while I don't love the idea of like a weak member of the community, I do like the idea of being aware that as a community, if we have some like really superstar people and then like people are living in poverty and are homeless, then our community is not so great, right? We need to clean it up and we need to support our folks that are vulnerable and activate community care.
Well, it goes back to that idea that, you know, I think that the African culture has a couple of ways in which they talk about community care, right? Where somebody was going through a hard time, like a child was going, I forget the story, but it was a child who was misbehaving and just really acting up in so many different ways. And the adult came and said, you know, instead of reprimanding, instead of doing all, how about we just all go sit down and just listen, right? And we just support and we just, what you just said, we just show up, right? We just show up all together with care, with love, with respect, and really try to understand what the needs are, because that's what's really going to modify that behavior instead of us trying to just change that behavior forcibly or in any other ways, right? Or convincing the person that it's doing wrong. Well, how about we just go and listen the reasons why and try to really understand it, because that's what's really going to bring real change. And I think that that's, you know, as I was reading through about community care, that's how that story just came to my mind so many times and in so many ways, because it really feels that it's about uncomfortably and awkwardly sitting together, right? Not just with those who think like us, but very much with those who think unlike us, and be willing to listen and be willing to create that space, a safe space where we can have these discussions that are going to be uncomfortable, that are going to be awkward, that are, you know, like today, you know, coming up to this live show. I mean, I feel very comfortable with you, but we're talking about things that we know trigger a lot of big feelings that are very uncomfortable because, like we said at the beginning, we want to stay away from that. If it's not what I believe and if it's not going along with what I feel, then I much rather just shut it down and tune it out and put it to the side. And I think we need to start taking action and we actually need to start getting ourselves uncomfortable. You don't have to do it in person. You can start doing by listening to something like this, you know, by maybe checking out articles. If you like a certain newscast, maybe start checking the one that presents news with a different angle, right? If you like a certain type of comments, maybe start reading the other comments, right? And just not because you're trying to change your mind, but because you're really trying to understand, you know, what that other party is saying and where they're coming from, so what you can leverage better conversations and understanding amongst each other. And Julie, this is, you know, self-care. It's something we have covered many, many times. And, you know, you talked about very individualized and you talked about very independent, and self-care is very, very much like that, right? And it really talks about, you know, to take a bubble bath or have the chocolate that you want, or, you know, just take care of yourself, find the ways that you can take care of yourself that are going to make you feel good. Well, the article challenged that a little bit because it said many times it feels like a chore and it feels almost like fake, even in a way, because it's like, I'm just going through the motions of what you're telling me self-care is, right? So when looking at self-care versus community care, do we practice both? Do we put them both together? Do we, you know, do we forget about self-care and just practice community care? And is that enough? Or, you know, how do we balance those two and how do they work together? How do we continue to take care of ourselves and amplify that to take care of our communities?
Yeah, so definitely do both. But I think, you know, I want to kind of like touch back on the election briefly, that like the weeks leading up and the week or so, I can't remember. Days mean nothing half the time. But the week or so that we were waiting for election results, and I was like, you know, scrolling or looking at the TV, telling me to practice self-care is ridiculous at that point, because this was a community issue, if that makes sense. So yes, I could distract myself. And I did tell people to practice self-care, because sometimes it's really difficult to, when you're struggling, like articulate these big concepts of, you know, oh, well, we need community care, so you should go wave at some neighbors. So looking at, you need both, basically, to put it very simply, you need self-care, but you also need community care. So there is a very famous guy that we talk about in abnormal psychology. His name is Thomas Szasz, and his last name is great, and I will never forget him. But he talked a lot about how mental health diagnoses are actually just problems in living, meaning that the person doesn't fit the community's expectations. And so it's not necessarily that the person has a mental illness, it's that the community is not a good fit for this person. And so this is showing up. Now, while this is very drastic, mental illness is real, I just want to be very clear, but there is some grain of truth about the community being a good fit for you and who you are. And we talk a lot about culture and expectations and all sorts of sociocultural considerations when we talk about mental illness and abnormal psychology, because it's important that, you know, if we pick me up and put me in Japan and I'm going to run around and tell everybody they have depression, it's really ignorant, first off, and I should not do that. But second, cultures have different displays, different expectations, all sorts of things. And so this comes back to our community as well. We can't fix poverty-driven mental illness by telling someone to practice self-care. That would be just as ignorant as plopping me into a different country and running around and telling people they have mental illness, right? So the reality is we have to clean up our communities. We have to show up. We have to address these problems in living. We have to address these problems in living in order to reduce the rate of mental health distress, to reduce poverty, to reduce hunger, to reduce discrimination, racism, sexism, ageism, ismism, right? To reduce all these different things, we have to practice community care, because the reality is a lot of people, if you look at the mental illness divide across socioeconomic statuses, the people that have more mental illnesses are people below the poverty line. Is that a surprise to anybody listening? Hopefully not. Poverty is very stressful. I, you know, have lived below the poverty line before. And if you were going to walk up to me and be like, Julie, just practice self-care and then everything will go away. No, I have really big concerns that I don't have control over. That's part of my community, right? And my community can help show up. And they did, right? I had friends drop off meals before. I've had friends offer to help pay for things before. This is community care, because the reality is myself could not take care of myself, because I was in a position that due to the way community was set up and like the way higher education is set up, is that I couldn't work enough to pay myself a living wage and still go to school and all these different things, right? So I needed my community care. I needed medical assistance. I needed some really generous friends. I needed offers of rides. I needed all sorts of things from my community to help me stay well, because telling me to go take a bubble bath when I'm worried about what I'm going to eat next is ridiculous. And I know that self-care is not just bubble baths, and I know you know that as well, but we're just simplifying this so that folks understand that you can't tell someone like, oh, go do some crafts because you're upset because you don't have enough money. Like, that's not the reality. So this is why community care is vital. It is so important that we, if we have any sort of privilege, financial, whatever the case may be, that we are giving back into our communities so that other folks aren't struggling needlessly. And I'm very passionate about this, as you can tell, but I think it's really goofy that a lot of America has taken individualism to a very high degree, to the point that they don't look out for other people. And that is not what I would want my community to be. And so how do I change that? I lead by example, and I give back to my community, and I ask my friends to as well.
I think, you know, I think that the key here is whether it's self-care or community care, it just goes back to what, you know, what it says right here. It's finding the balance, right? If you find yourself in the position of being able to give help. If you find yourself in the position where you need the help, ask for help. And I think that if we do that, you know, by asking help, we have said this so many times, by asking help, we are taking care of ourselves. I think that maybe one thing that it's not understood is that also by taking care of others, we are taking care of ourselves. And Julie, I want you to talk about, you know, that how community care and practicing community care actually supports your own well-being and your own health.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel better when I'm able to help people out, and I'm pretty sure you do too. And it's dumb little things. Like, I held the door for someone and I'm like, oh, look at me, such a nice human. Pat myself on the back, right? And so, yeah, flippantly, I could be like, oh, look at me, I'm a nice person. This is the community I want to live in. And now they've smiled and we're smiling. And this has a ripple effect. We talked about this with gratitude, that upward spiral of kindness, right? It's real. I mean, if we are going to greet everyone and smile, I mean, everybody knows somebody that just makes them feel good to be around. Don't you want to kind of get that same energy back into the world? Maybe not all the time because it's exhausting, but wouldn't you want you have to train yourself up to that level of being kind all the time if that's not natural for you. But if if you're able to help somebody out, doesn't that feel so much better? There's been times where, you know, I've wanted something before, you know, whatever, I don't know, shoes or something. And, you know, I bought it and that feels good for a little bit, but it doesn't, you know, I'm like, oh, I like these shoes. Right? I mean, that's it. And I'm not saying don't buy shoes and don't treat yourself, because that is also important. We can't like live like monks or something. But when I have donated to organizations, I feel so much better about that money spent than, you know, when I bought myself a new pair of boots, if it was just a superfluous pair of boots, right? So I think the importance here is understanding that community care comes back to you in a lot of ways. So if you are still approaching this from a very individual method, you can think about paying into the system so that it takes care of you if you need the help later, or if your friends do, if your loved ones do, because a lot of people feel uncomfortable asking for help. And don't wait for people to ask for help, I would say. So if you notice that one of your friends are struggling, send them a gift. Check in on them. This is community care. Drop a meal off. You know, whatever you can do that's reasonable. If your friend is just having a bad time right now but has a cause that's important to them, maybe you can donate or volunteer with them as well to give back to their community and show up for them and a larger community as a whole, right? It's important to do that. And I have a few friends that are very community care minded, and they have funds to be able to donate, and they also volunteer and things. And it makes me feel really happy to be able to donate to causes that are important to them as well. Because like you said, I've got my three mental health organizations, and I don't really have the capacity to do much more with my time beyond that. But I do occasionally have funds that I can give to other causes that are important to my friends, to their communities, to my community, whatever, and I can donate my funds there. I want to clarify, you can be a vulnerable person or somebody that needs help and still give back. So don't feel like you have to if you can't, but also don't feel like, oh, well, I use food stamps, so I can't give back to my community. Absolutely not. There's a lot of ways that you can contribute. And some of them might be as goofy as like drawing chalk stuff, positive messages around your community. Maybe it's that you can take a few minutes and pick up trash if there's something around your neighborhood or somewhere else. You know, there's a lot of ways that we can show up and give back to our community. But the reality is we all have many communities. They support us whether or not we think they do. They shape our worldview whether or not we think they do. And we have to take care of them if we want anything to move forward, if we want to heal, if we want to see improvement, then we have to start in the smaller areas and then work our way out.
Thank you so much for bringing that up, because probably in the way that I said it, it sounded like, well, if you need help, then you're on the side. And it's not. You always have the power to contribute. You always can contribute. You might need help in financially, but you can certainly contribute. I mean, maybe you know how to sew, you know, like when the pandemic started, people who were struggling financially, but I couldn't be able to make a mask if I wanted to. I mean, right? But there were so many people who started doing that because they have that ability. So yes, I mean, you can always contribute in other ways, even when you're struggling in one way. So thank you for clarifying that. I think that was really, really important. The other thing from what you said right now is, and this goes back to what I shared with you at the beginning, in practice, I think we all do this, but we all do this within our own small, tiny communities. And I think the challenge here, as we have the last 5 minutes left in our conversation, is to amplify that, right? Because you've talked about, and at the beginning of the conversation, you share with us some of the very practical ways in which we can practice and start doing community care, and in which we probably are already doing community care, right? You said we show up when somebody has a baby, you support artists by going to their, if you have a friend who's an artist, you will probably go and watch their play, right? Just bring a dish of hot food if you know that somebody's not feeling well, if you know that your friend has so many kids and doesn't have time to clean the house or pay for somebody to come and help clean the house. Like, you know, very practical ways that basically just show care, right? Show that you care. And we do that. We do that. I don't know one person who has not done one thing for other person to help and support other person. I think that the challenge here with community care is to amplify that, to do it not just for those that we love, but for everybody else, you know, for our neighbors, like Julie said, and I'm guilty of this too. I know very few neighbors' names. You know, like I know their faces and we're cordial and we say hello and we've had passing conversations. I couldn't tell you much more about them. And yes, I mean, that's important. It's important to get to know our neighbors. It's important to come together and expand our communities. We don't have to agree. We don't have to have the same type of mentality and support the same type of causes, but we just need to learn to live together within our community because we are neighbors and we, you know, we want to be there for each other and be able to show up and practice that community care. We usually end with the self-care send-off. I guess today, Julie, I want you to finish rather with a community care send-off and, you know, just kind of like give us really practical ways, right? Really quick things that maybe we can implement, maybe even today, you know, as we finish and wrap our conversation up this morning.
Yeah. So I posted yesterday in the middle of all this. And so if you would like to check out the post, it has, I can't remember, I think I put like 20 some suggestions for self-care or community care, community care that you can start doing today. So, and really just think about your community and maybe what's needed and also your strengths and what you can contribute as well. So maybe like we were talking about, maybe your immediate community doesn't need something that you specialize in, but another community could use what you specialize or have expertise in. Don't discount the very real contribution of just being there. Like a lot of volunteer gigs are really easy to do and they may take a couple of minutes of like, we want you to put this thing here and this thing there, like a little bit of training, but then you're good. And a lot of organizations, especially now, need bodies, need people to be there and help support. So that's a very easy way you can do that. Financially, of course, there's so many different places that you can donate. And I really encourage you to do some introspection and think about your values, what's important to you, what you want to see in your immediate communities, larger communities, and the U.S. as a whole, right? So if you're very passionate about mental health, maybe you want to focus on that. If you're passionate about sexual education or something, or contraceptive use, or harm reduction for drug use, or, you know, whatever you can think of, education, literacy. There's so many causes, right? Think about what is really important to you or a couple of causes that are important to you and really evaluate how you can intentionally show up. Because like Chris was saying, many of us practice community care, but probably is like an afterthought or just like, I like this person, let me do something for them. Or, you know, I have a little bit of extra money, let me do something. But I really like us, especially because it's the beginning of the year, even though it feels a little bit like a roller coaster in this first week, it's been a mess, that you really sit and think about your intentions for the year. And so one of my big intentions, I originally was talking about the word explore and how to explore things, but I think I'm really going to be flipping this into more about community and community care and how I can show up for, of course, my friend group. Like, of course, that goes without saying, right? I mean, somebody's having a baby, you know, I'm going to buy too many books and clothes and show up and be annoying and ask for 50,000 photos and promote self-care for mama and dad and, you know, whatever. But also, how can I show up for my neighborhood? How can I show up for the other communities that I'm part of? How can I show up for the United States? I know that sounds really lofty, but how can I work to create a United States that I am proud to live in and that I don't feel embarrassed or enraged by events that happen on a weekly basis? And so how can we show up for our community and then communities and then the big community of the United States? And so really sit and reflect, think about your strengths, think about what you have capacity for. Don't overdo it. Don't burn out. But really, we have to care for our communities in order for anything to make progress forward.
And I think that's a very empowering way of finishing and closing this show today. You know, just think about what's important to you, how you can start incorporating and doing something about that, and that will impact positively yourself, as Julie, you know, told us, and then your community. It doesn't have to be big. You can start very small, but you will see that if we all do that, it's just really going to scale up, and then we're going to be very, very proud of the communities that we belong to, and we're going to rebuild this country together, because to rebuild this country, we need to start right in our homes, in our neighborhoods, and expand from there. Julie, thank you so much for bringing this concept to light. Thank you so much for challenging us to start doing the work, you know, and really caring and really showing up, expanding our bubbles in a way, and really just stepping out of our comfort zones also, because I think that's what we've been doing. We've been staying in our comfort zones, and we've been staying and just practicing care only within the limits that we have set for ourselves. Well, it's time to really blur those limits and expand it forward so that we can heal and move forward together. So thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for watching. We can heal. Start with yourself. Show care to you and show care to others.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.